Welcome to Galactic Chat. I'm Helen Stubbs, and I'm talking to Sue Wright, the woman behind Tiny Owl Workshop, a Brisbane-based publisher pioneering innovative publishing projects including Napkin Stories, Pillow Fight, Unfettered, The Lane of Unusual Traders, and Krampus Crackers. How are you going, Sue?
Very well. Look, we're in the middle of three projects at the moment, so I'm a bit all over the place, I must say.
You must be very busy.
Yes, but luckily, because we have two very lovely people actually involved in Krampus Crackers, like they're doing all of the editing and basically running the projects, which is brilliant. So
wonderful.
So I just kind of have to get in contact with them every now and again, and they just go, no, all good, it's all under control. So that's fantastic. So
tell us more about Krampus Crackers.
Okay, so Krampus Crackers is a Christmas project. And, I know it's always a bit early to be talking about Christmas, but you just kind of have to. But
I guess you need to plan, like it takes a lot of time to get things together.
It does, basically kind of starting a year in advance and then kind of progressing the project over a year. So instead of going the usual Christmas route, we thought we'd try and take a little bit of a different tack. And so there's a little creature, quite repulsive creature really, called Krampus, who's hails from the Northern Hemisphere. He's a fantastic mythical beast, basically. Okay. And it's about that kind of good and bad, naughty nice, good and evil kind of side. So playing more exploring the kind of naughty, evilly side of Christmas. And it's taking that notion of Christmas crackers, which, you know, has the terrible jokes and the strange little gifts and, you know, the Christmas hats, and actually using that as an opportunity to get short stories out and make Christmas a little bit kind of richer in terms of stories and myth and then doing the thing that we actually did with Napkin Stories, which is getting them out through local outlets in cafes, and, you know, so people get a kind of a lovely surprise in terms of a story. And but it's actually happening in, it was just happening in Australia, but a young woman actually put her hand up and said, can we please actually make it happen in the UK? So she's actually making it happen in the UK, which is absolutely brilliant. So,
great. Where are you going to sell these through, I suppose, your Christmas crackers? And is it going to be like a fully assembled bonbon type?
It is a fully assembled bonbon. That's exactly
awesome.
What it is. So, which hopefully will just kind of go off with a bang. So, bang, story, hat, fantastic.
Right.
And there's some brilliant artwork that we're actually putting in there from local Brisbane artists. And then that artwork also goes over to the UK as well. So, it's kind of, it's like we did with Napkin Stories, which is getting Australian voices out to the world in a different way, and voices that might not necessarily get an international market. So,
do you know who your artists are yet?
So Terry Widborn, who worked with us, he's a brilliant local artist, and he worked with us on a project called Unfettered, which was an illustration-led project. And Terry's just he's almost like a mythical beast himself, really. So he's a really gorgeous illustrator. He loves the twee side of things as much as he kind of likes the dark side of things as well. And he works incredibly fast. He's one of the fastest artists I've actually ever worked with. So he's a delight to work with. And he kind of has become like a little tiny owl person unto himself, really. So, I reckon I'm kind of stuck with him, which is brilliant. And then there's another guy called Simon Cotty, who's a local animator who's just gone over to Canada. Some other local artists are a young one called Sienna Sito, a young guy called Josh, who yet to see his artwork. He's a younger, less known artist, and an amazing artist called Gustavo Ortega, who works with Canary Press and does all their absolutely stunning covers. So, and the very, very fabulous Kathleen Jennings, who does work for Small Beer Press, and, yeah, she's amazing. So
wonderful. So So will these artists be reading the stories and responding to the stories, or is the artwork and the writing separate?
Yeah, the writing's separate. So it really is just
all Krampus-themed?
Yeah, they're all Krampus themes. So all the stories are Krampus themes. So it's kind of then trying to match them up a little bit with whatever illustration actually works. So there's 6 illustrations but 12 stories in the Australian set and 12 different stories in the UK set.
Yeah, but can people pre-order your Christmas crackers?
I'm actually still working out the details because I've had the clash of the project. So and because I work full time, I've tried to pace projects so that they don't all converge, but I got my timing wrong, so it's all converged. So I'm running as hard as I can to kind of work things out as I go. So so hopefully, yes, people will be able to pre-order full 12 set. Or the the half dozen as well. So
wonderful.
But we'll work that out very, very soon.
They can come and have another look at your website, maybe Tiny Owl website, if they're really keen.
Yes.
Keep their eye on it. I want some. So how did Tiny Owl Workshop come to life?
It's a very good question. It was just about timing and me, like my daughter is now 22 and finding that kind of opportunity to go, oh my gosh, I don't have a small person to kind of take care of anymore. So what's an opportunity that I can explore? And I've wanted to do this for a really long time. And ages ago, I was traveling overseas and I got this napkin, which was had printed poetry on it while I was actually in London. And I tucked it away in my bag and I carried it around with me for about 5 years. Thinking that I would really love to do that one day, but not really know how. And I'm not actually an Australian citizen. I was born in England, and I went to do a course, and they basically said, "Oh no, you have to pay full price for it because you're not an Australian citizen, so you can't get heads." Blah, blah. No, that's okay. So I just went, "Oh, okay." So I either pay an enormous amount of money to do that, or I just actually go out and do it. So I just think, well, I'll actually go out and do it, and I'll call myself a publisher in training, because then everyone goes, oh, she's just in training, so she makes mistakes. it's all good.
That's wonderful. It's good on you for just jumping in and, I mean, learn by doing. And
it's been the best thing as well. And I also write as well, but I must say it's, like, been the best thing to do as a writer, seeing life from the other side and learning how and you can see your own learnings that other people, like, people are just on a career of writing. I mean, they're writers, so it's whether they're early career or later career, and so you just kind of read stuff and you go, oh, that's where I am.
Yeah.
Or I've got a long way to go till I can actually write like that. But it's been an utter delight and I've really, really enjoyed it. So and I'm going to keep enjoying it, so hopefully it keeps going, yeah.
Wonderful. When did Tiny Owl Workshop come into being?
Not even 2 years yet, so I think...
You've accomplished a lot, really, in 2 years.
Well, people keep telling me that I've been around for longer, and I go, have I? Maybe I've just forgotten, but then I kind of look back and I go, no, it's only been 2 years. I think it's 2 years in October.
Yeah.
So 1 year just kind of flew past so fast, and this year's done the same. So I'm pretty sure, I think Peter Ball at Queensland Writers Centre said Tiny Owl's been around for 3 years. I really did have to check my facts, but I'm pretty sure it's only two. But, you know, others will argue with me, I'm pretty sure.
Well, tell us about how you did Napkin Stories, when they were launched and...
Okay, it was that idea that I told you about before, wanting to actually do that, but then seeing an opportunity and going, I would really love to work with local writers on this. And given that I'm not known, that I haven't actually done this before, and I've just got enthusiasm, and I've editing stuff for years and years, but in a professional writing kind of capacity. So that kind of side of things didn't really worry me. So just put the call out. You know, I use social media a lot. So, you know, you see me on Twitter and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that was a way of kind of getting everything out and amplifying. And surprisingly, there were lots of people who then were interested. And then I just said, okay, well, of course I know that these things can be printed on napkins, so that can be the easy side of it. But, of course, it was a lot harder to actually find someone who could really print it. So by the end of the, I think it was November when all the stories were in and the editing had been done, and I still actually hadn't found someone who could print the size that I actually needed. Wow. And came across these amazing women who started their own company, Creative Emporium, and they were just a delight to work with, and they worked with Letterpress, so they actually letterpressed thousands. I think it was 3,000.
Special printing technique? I don't know.
Yeah, well, they have these absolutely gorgeous letterpress Heidelberg machines, which are just stunning, and they loved the project so much that they invited the first lot of writers into just to come and see their stories actually being printed, which must have been 2013.
But whereabouts?
In Brisbane, in Petrie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Petrie Terrace. So they've since moved, but it's in Brisbane. So, you know, a handful of the writers who could actually get there went and saw their, you know, their stories being printed, which was a bit special as well. So, yeah, that was really nice. And it was a nice connection for me to see writers so connecting with the joy of their stories. And, you know, like a napkin is something that, you know, you wipe nose on or whatever, but it was really a precious kind of...
I think it becomes precious once it happens. Yeah. A good story on it, and it's wonderful that you're bringing all those creative people and capacities together.
Yeah, and they're just their enthusiasm. So of course the napkins then went out to cafes across Brisbane that we just rang and said, look, you know, would you be interested? And everyone said yes, which is brilliant. So avid reader, right down to I think there was one on the Gold Coast, there was one in Samford, and but mostly around kind of Brisbane City. And it kind of went a little bit ballistic with people going from cafe to try and actually get the whole set, because they didn't want to rob a set, you know, from the cafe. And I sat with my partner, Mark, in a cafe in the city and just watched people. You know, it was a bit pervy, really, but just watching people actually pick them up, and couples and friends actually reading to them to each other, which was a bit, you know, made me a little bit teary, but I loved it. So it was absolutely gorgeous. So, and that gives you the hunger to actually do more, and that you know that you're actually doing something that's really quite meaningful. And, you know, I've always loved stories and books, and yeah. So that was the first napkin story. And then we did it all again for Halloween. So, but a bigger project.
Wonderful. And do you see yourself doing napkin stories again?
Yeah, possibly next year, because it's been, I think it's become a thing that people associate with Tiny Owl now. So I have had a couple of people actually ask me to do it again. The scary thing now is because we did it, the last project in the UK, Toronto, and in Brisbane, people have been going, oh, can you do it in those three places? And can you actually go, we'd love to do it in New York, and we'd love to do it in some of the, I think it was Germany, and then in Ireland as well. And so people kind of just going.
It's really gross.
Yeah, really, really small. But the lovely thing about napkin stories as well is that there's a young woman called Kate McDonald, who made the whole thing actually happen in the UK last time, and she's absolutely brilliant. And it's the same with Krampus Crackers this time, with a young woman called Vicky Poynting, who's actually making it happen in the UK. And they're just doing it out of the love of it, and we're paying for the stories and blah, blah. But, yeah, so that's the gorgeous connections as well, yeah.
So with these projects, do you tend to keep the local stories in the local area, or are you mixing stories up between like Australian writers and Toronto writers? And
yeah, no, that's exactly the idea, is that for Natkin stories, so when we did it with Toronto, all the Brisbane stories went to Toronto, so there was a mix, so that everyone, it was like an international triangle of stories.
And do the stories have a different flavour from the different...
Yeah, they do. You wouldn't. It wasn't unexpected, but it was a delight to see just how different phraseology, different tones, and of course different seasons as well.
Yeah.
So you've got Australians writing about, say Christmas, where it's just so hot, very different. And then of course Canadians are actually just writing about how cold and the differences and kind of like little nuances in language, which are absolutely delightful as well. And and trying to keep those nuances in the editing story, so I'm not editing out culture as well. And it, I think the surprise was that Australian writers have a very authentic Australian voice, which isn't Australian.
Yes.
It's a really lovely, warm kind of lyrical voice that I didn't really expect, but when you can see the English stories and then the Canadian stories, it becomes even more prominent, which is an utter delight for me. So
that is wonderful. Interesting. So how many stories in total was there across that whole project, if you remember?
I think there was 31, 32 stories. Sorry, I'm just wanting my partner to be quiet. There's about 31 stories in all, and there was a full, that was in the, the Halloween story, yeah, but there was only 12 in the first set, and I think it was the first set of stories that went home with, so Margaret Atwood actually came to Brisbane, and she took a set of the stories actually home with her, because one of the writers was at a do that she was at. So that was a kind of delight. And that's how Toronto actually happened. So,
wow.
So Tenenji tweeted about it, and that was a really lovely connection for some of the writers in Brisbane who that just wouldn't really happen. And it was just serendipity as well. So it's that connections. That's the thing I also love about Twitter as well, is like there's writers now who are in Toronto, the UK, the US and Brisbane, who are actually connected by quite small stories, really.
Your projects.
Which is a delight. It's an absolute delight, yeah.
It's wonderful. And tell us about Pillow Fight too.
Okay, Pillow Fight just came as an opportunity because the Brisbane Writers Festival was actually happening, and I was just a volunteer at the Brisbane Writers Festival, I think 2 years, maybe 3 years in a row, I can't remember. So I knew how the festival actually worked, and they have a massive tent there, which lots and lots of people, lots of things actually happening, and lots of sofas and places for people to actually just, excuse me, sit and hang out. And there's lots of people who come there who aren't actually going to the Writers' Festival as well, because the Brisbane Festival is on at the same time. So thousands of people actually come through this space, really.
That's wonderful.
So it was the same thing going, and this was for Brisbane writers only, to get the voices of Brisbane writers in a much more prominent way. And just to have them kind of there. So when people just sat down, to have a drink and to, just to kind of flop down, that there were stories there. So Tiny Owl is also a little bit about getting stories out in unexpected places. So it was unexpected to actually have a proper story. And the Pillow Fight idea actually came about because you've probably seen it. Like there is a little bit of a thing in writerdom where people, it's like literary versus genre, and it's a bit kind of silly, really. I think it's a bit silly. So I just thought, wow, it'd be really great if we could have, six or seven literary stories and six and seven genre stories, and people at the festival, they could have these pillows which they'd use to kind of biff each other up, just kind of going, no, genre better, no, literary is better. So I did imagine people.
Did that happen? Did people actually hit it?
No, it never did. I was really annoyed.
I would have.
People kind of, they got the pillows. It was really, oh, no, precious. But people did actually steal the pillows, which I took as a, some people stole the pillows.
That's good.
Took as a sign of, it was a good sign.
Appreciation.
Yeah.
And, if anyone stole a pillow and they're listening, can they please pay you? No. Pay for your pillows.
Some were actually the authors of the pillows. So, okay. So that was okay.
That was their author copy, maybe.
Yeah. But then we did copies for all the authors as well. Actually, there's one author that I still owe some pillows to. So that was and that was a delightful way of actually just showcasing some local authors as well. And I think some of them went up to the green room as well. So the international authors got to see some kind of local stories as well. So yeah, so that was the idea behind Pillow Fight, and it was just a bit of fun.
Cool. Can I ask, was there a clear delineation between the genre stories and the literature stories, and what?
No, not really. It was kind of possibly for some people, but it's hard to tell. Like if someone's written a really beautiful lyrical story about a dragon, then is it literature? Is it, you know, genre? I can't really.
It's both.
Yeah, it is both. Yeah. So it is a very artificial kind of structure, but people seem to love that split. So yeah.
So next, what can you tell us about Unfettered?
Yep. So Unfettered was I'd seen Terry Widborn's artwork on the front of. He works with a local author, Nick Earls, who's very well known. Author, and they Terry and he produced some books called Word Hunters, and I didn't realise I was in a bookshop, you know, as I often am, and picked up a Word Hunters book, and it actually was Terry's artwork that I picked it up for, and I didn't even realise until afterwards that it was a Nick Earls book, and so I followed Terry on Twitter, saw the artwork that he did, and approached him to talk about possibly doing some artwork for Tiny Owl. So we met, and it's kind of just really clicked. And so I started talking about what the possibilities were. And he'd always wanted to do an illustration first kind of project. So came up with this idea of him being given free rein to actually do 10 illustrations that he actually wanted to do. And I have done illustration in the past as well. So it was a case of knowing how to brief him and giving him that trust. And he came up with 10 absolutely stunning illustrations that we then put out as part of the call out to actually inspire stories. And that was the first Tiny Owl project that actually the call out was an international call out as well, and the website just went ballistic with the enormous number of hits and massive interest in it, and more stories, you know, pouring in that I'd seen certainly from you know the projects that we'd actually done before. So it was, and we've actually you know, we're still just going through. I'm still doing the final edits on the 12 stories. No, not 12 stories, 18 stories that we actually chose. It was really hard. It was an incredibly hard slog to actually choose the stories. And so there's an exciting collection of 18 stories that are actually coming out of that, along with the illustrations and putting together. It's more of a box of stories which are each individually designed rather than a book of stories. So there's an e-book. Yeah, so, and then the idea is to actually do that hopefully on an annual basis where we invite a different illustrator in to do a completely different set of illustrations. And so the collection of Unfettered stories grows. So, yeah.
Wonderful.
So we're hopefully.
Does that mean you're already planning the next one?
When I can get these stories edited, then and then a bit further along in the lane, then yeah, I'll be able to kind of give it some attention.
And the lane, let's talk about the lane.
Yeah. So the lane, I've got no idea how the lane actually came about. I think.
So we're talking about the Lane of Unusual Traders, which is a cool project. I'm going to give you a break from talking because I'm pounding you with the questions here.
No, that's okay.
Do you
want to talk about it?
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll just explain that you have a map with a number of shops.
Yep.
20 shops?
23, I think. Yep.
23 shops.
Yep.
And some of them, or you asked, you're going to choose, is it 10 flash stories and 10 short stories about the shops that fill the lane or fill part of the lane? Because there's a lot more of the lane to continue to world build. So it's a world building and story project.
Yes. So it's a shared world building story project. That's exactly right. Yeah. So once again, working with a couple of artists as well. So Terry's one of those artists. So he was the person who came up with the design for the map, which he's done an amazing job again. And then two other artists as well. So Simon Cotty again, and then Lauren Carney, who's an absolutely gorgeous artist as well, both local Brisbane artists, doing some kind of inspiration artwork to help people imagine what one of the shops could actually look like. So the idea is exactly as you said, to try and actually start in a lane and actually see how far we can actually build out this world, just using this, starting from a kind of a loose premise of a particular lane, of a particular bad guy who's called the Kraken. Some kind of loose scenario that sets up that there was a revolution and the revolutionaries were crushed and the lane is kind of what's come out of the rubble, basically. So terribly oppressed people, but magical kind of place as well. But we were hoping that the same thing, that people, genre writers and literary writers or literary genre, whatever, we could write worlds in parallel, so where there might be more of a magical kind of world come out of it and more of a real world come out of it as well, and that the two worlds might actually build in parallel. So, yeah, so that might actually still happen. So we're going through the flash fiction stories, which I think I couldn't hold myself to 10. I think we've chosen 13. And then we're actually just in the middle of choosing the short stories, which is mind-blowingly. The story is actually coming in, you just go, oh, that's amazing, would never thought of that. Gorgeous writing. So who knows where it will actually lead, but it will actually be a continuing project.
When are you going to move into full-time publishing?
Oh, this is the thing.
I don't know how you fit all this in.
When we can actually start selling some stuff. So there's a book that's just about to be released. It's just got the proofs from the printers, and that's actually coming back. So it's our first children's book, and it's called Will You Be My Sweetheart? So that's our first book to actually hit their shelves. It's a children's book. It's a picture book. And it's about a knight who just looks for love in all the wrong places. And it's beautifully illustrated by a young guy over in the UK from Manchester called David Jumble. And it's just a stunning picture book. So the idea is to have a range of, books, toys, various other things to actually, that hopefully, wonderful, even if they don't earn us millions of money, which they won't, but will hopefully earn enough to actually then pay for the next project and for the next project. So I don't have any grand visions of Tiny Owl being the next, HarperCollins or Haché or, but I think it will actually start to grow hopefully within the next 2 years, or I'm going to fall into a heap. So,
When do you do your own writing? When do you focus on your own writing, and how do you balance it?
Yeah, I take before I start work each morning, I go and sit at a cafe. So you can probably find me at any cafe in this Brisbane CBD, which has good tea. And I write from 7:30 till 8 o'clock every morning. So, but that's kind of pretty much my writing time at the moment. And it's really quite small, and I can feel myself getting, you know, quite rusty. And also I fear, because I'm actually just editing and doing stuff at the moment, I fear the fact that I might actually be stealing people's ideas unconsciously. So I'm very, very aware of not to do that as well. So I've been doing a little bit of writing for a project by If Books Australia called Open Changes, I think it is, which is part of their bigger project. So I've got a couple of little flash fiction stories up there. So if anyone wants to kind of, you know, edit and see, you know, my own stuff, they can actually just go and look at the If Book Australia
site. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So they can edit the editor basically and go, oh, I can write better than that, which is fine. I'm more than happy. Yeah.
So, but they don't say that. That's not very nice.
Oh, no, no, no.
Sure they won't.
Oh, no. Writers are gorgeous people. Like, they're really, it's just been a delight, really, actually getting to kind of know more people, you know, like yourself in the writer community. I've just come across the most delightful connections and really very generous group of people. So, and sharing ideas, and people get disappointed from rejection, but they generally just tend to go, oh well, kind of bounce back. And yeah, so pretty amazing. I'm impressed.
Well, on that note, what advice do you have for writers who want to work with Tiny Hour Workshop?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think probably the advice that they probably get from everyone else, which is just be authentic and write what you want to write. Don't write what you think we might want to see.
Right.
I think we've had a couple of people, I guess, actually submit because they think that Tiny Owl is this kind of publisher. We might want to actually see this kind of, you know, a certain kind of writing, but we're really quite open to different genres, different styles, and really it really is all about the story. And so just, yeah, that's terrible advice, isn't it?
It's
just
that's good advice. And I think, like, you hear something similar from, say, GenreCon or something, like an event like that, to write what you want to write.
And it, I guess it really is about, you know, the importance of not sending your first draft of the story as well, because the more I'm on this side of publishing, the more I can really tell that it really is someone who's working out a story. So there's a certain logistics that people, that I think all writers actually go through, in terms of going, you know, they entered a room, they looked up at the roof, they did this, they did this. And on a first draft, people work out the logistics of how a story can work. And I think sometimes people send their stories in too early, and you can see that what a story could be, but it's going to take development to actually get it there. And sometimes you can see the potential of a story, but if you've got, you know, 200 stories to actually get through,
yeah,
it just makes it easier for someone to then set that aside, because you've got, say, 20 stories which are just beautifully polished, and you know, or someone's actually taken it for their third, fourth or fifth. So
yeah.
And I think if people are writing flash fiction, that they might believe that it doesn't take as much care and attention as a proper story would. So
yeah,
the second bit of advice is
draft edit, and redraft.
Yeah. Get onto your beta readers and
Wonderful. Well, thank you for talking to me. They're all my questions.
Yay! No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
No worries.
It's great.